Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP Lead for Literacy webinar on highlighting key considerations for monitoring reading progress. With us this afternoon, I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Gracie Branch, NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning. Hi, Gracie.
Hi, Honor, and thank you so much. I'm pleased to be here and to get to introduce to you today this great group of facilitators. NAESP has a wonderful partnership with the Lead for Literacy Center at the University of Oregon, and that's why we've been able to bring you this great series of literacy webinars. So with us today, we have David Feinstein. He is the doctoral candidate in the School of Psychology program at the University of Oregon, and he works as a graduate employee at the Center on Teaching and Learning. He has experience working as a special education assistant and school psychologist in British Columbia, Canada, and has more recently served on projects in Oregon and as an interventionist and data coach. And he's going to be defending that dissertation in August, so we're just going to wish you good luck today, David, on that. Dr. Lana Santoro is the co-principal investigator of the Lead for Literacy Center and is a research associate and curriculum developer with the University of Oregon College of Education Center on Teaching and Learning. Dr. Santoro is the co-principal investigator on a series of research studies focused on classroom discourse, vocabulary, and comprehension of elementary grade students at risk for reading failure. And last but never least is Dr. Lauren Artsy. She is the technical assistance coach for the Lead for Literacy Center and senior researcher at AIR. Artsy's research and technical assistance activities focus on the areas of second language education, literacy instruction for English learners, and students with disabilities and multi-tiered systems of support. So welcome, and we're looking forward to the webinar today.
Thanks so much, Gracie. We're excited to be with you and support our collaboration between the Lead for Literacy Center and NAESP. The Lead for Literacy Center is a partnership with the Center on Teaching and Learning and the American Institutes for Research. We have funding from the Office of Special Education Programs, U.S. Department of Education, to help support our work with technical assistance as we support implementation of evidence-based practices. So today's webinar is just a continuation of a series focused on that implementation of evidence-based practices. And I'll turn things over to Lauren, who will tell you a little bit more about our series.
Great. Thank you so much. So this is part of a partnership between the Lead for Literacy Center and NAESP, and we've been running a series of these events focused on different components that are important for school leaders to work with in developing school-wide reading frameworks at the school. And so this session focuses on assessment. It's our second assessment series focus, and this one is focused on monitoring reading progress. We do have three upcoming sessions left in the series. The next two are more instruction-oriented, and we'll dive into evidence-based practices to support children's code-based skills as well as their meaning level skills for adequate reading comprehension. And then we'll wrap up the series for this year looking at professional development structures in schools. All of these sessions are recorded and archived. So if you would like to reference back to any of the prior ones, there was another assessment session in November that focused on screening that we'll refer to. They're up on NAESP and archived as well. Coming along with this session today, everyone should have been sent some materials, just additional materials to accompany the PowerPoint. So the first is just a note-taking template. If, as the session's going on, you want to note some key takeaways, some implications for your specific context, and some actionables related to the different sections that we'll hear about, there is a fillable note-taking guide. And then with all of these web events, we provided some additional links to additional resources, and there's also additional resource links in the PowerPoint as well for additional reference after the webinar. And so for today, we will focus on recognizing features of evidence-based and research-based practices related to assessing literacy skills with a specific focus on progress monitoring. Again, for screening, which is another really important component in MTSS with assessment, there was a session in November that focused on that. We'll talk a lot about, some barriers and solutions around progress monitoring, and then identify the strengths and stretches of assessment practices within schools related to database decision making as it pertains to progress monitoring. And before I turn it over to David, we'll just briefly overview the Lead for Literacy framework and some of the theory behind it. And so we know for adequate reading comprehension, children need to have strong, what we called word recognition or code-based skills. So being able to understand the sounds and how the sounds make up certain words, reading fluency, decoding. But also it's really important for children to understand what they're reading. And that's what you see under the column related to language comprehension. So having strong vocabulary skills, oral language proficiency, background knowledge, and those elements lead to good reading comprehension. So this is a theory around, it's called simple view of reading. This specific graphic came from the Ohio Literacy Plan, and the link to that is on the screen below, and we can also share that as well. But these are the important components of reading. And so when we think about these related to MTSS on the next slide, we want to think about how we can promote evidence-based practices for learning and instruction and assess students' understanding of these skills throughout a tiered system. So we talk about these practices in terms of multi-tiered systems of support for reading, where there's strong core instruction that meets the needs of about 80% of the students. And we do assessments, use assessments and database decision-making practices to understand if some students and who the students are that need additional supports and in what area of support they may need, and then can provide intervention at the tier two and tier three level to support those students and continuously monitor their progress to understand how the instruction is meeting their needs. So in Lead for Literacy, we developed a framework that really situates the evidence-based practices for language and literacy within an MTSS framework. And this is the Lead for Literacy framework, and it's meant to help guide school leaders in these areas to for school-wide reading frameworks. So the elements, there's five elements: looking at standards, priorities, and goals, administration, organization, and communication, and then assessments and instruction. And all that is situated within professional development systems. And so in a minute, I will put a link into the Lead for Literacy Center and also our framework pages. And we have a variety of tools and resources and some needs assessment type of tools that can help guide leaders in this framework. And it's important that we situate everything within what we call a continuous improvement approach. And so if there's an area that comes up, like, for instance, maybe something from today's webinar is looking at processes related to progress monitoring, that we use a continuous improvement framework to set goals, evaluate and prioritize the goals, action plan as school teams, implement, and then kind of repeat the cycle. And again, all of that is really situated within the Lead for Literacy framework, and it really relates to and increases improved student outcomes. So great. And an important piece of all of this is teaming structures as well, that having school leadership teams to work with the framework and work with the continuous improvement process is really important. And so we talk about different types of teaming, and all of this information too, and tools and resources to help with teaming structures is also on the Lead for Literacy webpage. And I will put some of those links in the chat. But for instance, there can be a school-wide MTSS R team that focuses on systems and school-wide structures. Also, there might be grade level teams, and then there's teams related to database decision making. So school leadership teams really have an important role in the continuous improvement approach. And so there's some resources that talk about teaming, about planning for teaming, intentional rollout, and using database decision making structures and support to understand instruction and develop processes around assessment to really shed light on how the MTSS system and the evidence-based practices are meeting students' needs. And all of that leads to use and sustainability. So, great. And this is just a quote from a recent book, and the full link to the resources in the back of the PowerPoint, and everyone was sent that as well with the resources. But the quote says, although principal support is key when we factor in other aspects of their implementation, having an effective school-based team that uses database decision-making is even more critical to sustainability. So we just wanted to shed light on the teaming structures for all of this. And so this is the Lead for Literacy website. I will put the link in the chat, but I did want to draw your attention to the Lead for Literacy framework link at the top of the page. Has information on all of the framework elements. So I know I went through it really quickly. It also has tools that can be used for school teams to action plan around the framework elements. There's also a resource repository. So you can type in different topics related to each of the framework elements, and it will show you different resources for instance, professional development modules that are online, different toolkits, different informational briefs. And then there's also in the middle, there's literacy leadership briefs for, short infographic type of briefs that provide information about the framework for school leaders. It also provides links to additional resources such as What Works Clearinghouse practice guides from IES and other resources as well. So I'll put all of these links in the chat in a minute as well, so you have that information. And that was part of the resources page that was emailed out. In a minute, I'll turn it over to, David, and he'll talk through the assessment component of the Lead for Literacy framework, and you can see the different areas on the screen. But first, we just wanted to get a sense of who is here. And so we have a couple of polls, and I think this is a good time to have the first poll, just to get an understanding of who's here. So if you're a principal, another administrator, a teacher, educator.
Okay, another second, and I'll close the poll, and we'll share the results. Okay, I'm ending polling now and sharing the results.
Great. So this is really helpful for us. So yeah, we'll talk about the content as it pertains to school leadership and administration, but we'll also kind of talk about the teacher and other educators' role in the assessment system. And if you're able to just write your role and in the chat, that will help us to know who's here. So great. So I will turn it over to David, and also, we wanted to encourage everybody to use the chat, and David will talk more about that. And in the meantime, I'll put some of the links that I just talked through in the chat.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lauren, as well as both Gracie and Honor for hosting us today. It is an absolute pleasure to be here. As Lauren had mentioned, this is part two to the assessment sessions. And the first one was really a deep dive on screening. And this is the natural follow-up, monitoring student progress, because screening is a really good indicator of the health of your literacy system. And then we can take that indicator just a little further and look at how we can make instructional adjustments based on data. So as we're going through today, I hope to spark some ideas for you, some discussion, some continuous improvement avenues. And when that comes up, please do feel free to put that in the chat. Any questions that you have, you're more than welcome to directly message Lauren Artsy, or you can share a question or comment with the entire group today. So happy to have you contribute in ways that are comfortable for you. And also we can get through this webinar and it can be effective for you in disseminating a whole ton of information in addition to a lot of resources. It's wonderful to see a number of folks from around the country today, absolutely acknowledging that there is inclement weather. So please know that if you need to come back to the recording because your internet goes out, that is A-okay. We're happy to have you here for when you can be here. The key foundation in understanding assessment is really two pieces. One, assessment is about collecting data. And two, assessment is also about using that data. For the most part, we are so good at that first one. We sit on mountains of data, piles of data, but using it for instructional change, particularly difficult. In the current context, which is the last portion of what we'll talk about today, it's even more difficult. So we're going to zero in on progress monitoring. We're really going to look at those measures which are efficient, valid, and understandable for how we can make instructional adjustments to help students. We do that because we want to be matching the instruction to the intensity of student need. the entire rationale for progress monitoring can really be summed up in this one figure. I'm a really big fan of this figure, and I'm going to orient you to this really quickly. We have an intervention in each column. The different vertical lines are changes between intervention 2 and intervention 3, for example. So there are four different interventions we are trying. There's one long line from the bottom left of the figure to the top right. That's our goal line. We keep wanting to make progress toward a reading goal. Along the x-axis or the horizontal is time. So we're doing different measures across every single week. And across the y-axis or the vertical is the amount of words read correctly, oral reading fluency, any sort of literacy measure where we can measure that student progress in a really quick and efficient way. So our intervention one, we're seeing that the student is making some progress, but not really in line or parallel with that goal line. So after a number of weeks, we decide, let's change it. This time we see intervention two, there's actually a bit of a decrease. And after even fewer weeks, we decide we should change it again. Intervention three, again, we see a bit of a decrease, and let's try something different for intervention four, where we finally realize that instructional change that matched student needs, so they were able to acquire some of those foundational literacy skills. This is why we progress monitor. We progress monitor because after a number of weeks, if what we're doing isn't working, we need to change what we're doing. We need to better meet student needs. That is on us as professionals in education to own that issue, identify the problem, and really, really work on it in an effective way for students. Progress monitoring itself is typically done by interventionists, so paraprofessionals, teachers, educators of all kind, allied professionals in schools. Sometimes designees are the ways that we refer to these folks who are actually doing a progress monitoring measure, which is very quick. It's a brief assessment, which is known to be valid, reliable, and evidence-based. We'll talk about the evidence base very shortly. Now, we do progress monitoring regularly. If you can have the capacity in your building to do it weekly, fantastic for those students who need it. We're not progress monitoring an entire school or an entire district all at once. That would be absolutely capacity overload. We're progress monitoring the students who demonstrate academic need, who really are showing us that they're at risk for reading failure, and we need to do everything we can as educators to intervene on that problem and really help ensure that they do not realize academic failure. So in that, we want to be making sure we build in checkpoints. We want to be monitoring progress as students are working toward goals that include literacy acquisition. So we can do all kinds of fancy things. We can estimate rates of improvement. We can identify the students who are not building skills that are commensurate with that rate of improvement. And then we can think, what are the instructional variables that we can change to better meet their needs? Now, the actual progress monitoring piece is only part of it. As I mentioned, assessment is about both collecting data and using it. So when you're going to use it, you want to have a really clear decision-making framework in how you do that. You're going to want a decision-making team in your school building, or a data review team, they're sometimes called. And together, that team analyzes, interprets, and discusses different progress monitoring data. And they can use that data to determine next steps. This team would meet as often as needed in your assessment calendar. And as a literacy leader, it's really on you to think about the frequency of those meetings and how you can pair that with the instructional change, which is realistic in your school building. Meeting every 2 weeks might be really good for data reviews, but if you're not going to be changing instruction monthly or even every term, then it might not need to be as frequent. So we do this because we really want to be looking at the effectiveness of the curriculum that we are delivering. That is the database decision-making sort of framework, really looking around efficacy and effectiveness. Now, I'm going to drill just a little deeper on the what. What exactly are we talking about with progress monitoring? These are measures which look very similar to screeners. They are very brief, and they're a really strong indicator of student success around literacy. Because we're here as Lead for Literacy, of course, that is the academic domain we're talking about. You can apply this in other academic domains, but all the examples today will be around literacy. And one thing that we know is that if we give an oral reading fluency passage, for example, that is just a passage of text one to maybe four paragraphs long, depending on the student level. And we, that passage, by the way, can also be narrative text, informational, all kinds of different rich, authentic, real text. We offer it to a student and we say, go ahead and read, get as far as you can. And then as we're listening really carefully, we're really paying attention to whether or not students are picking up all of those words and they're reading them correctly and they have some prosody in their language as they're reading. Good readers do all kinds of sophisticated things they can't always explain because they've learned to decode, recode, and unitize words, and they can do it so fast as they've acquired all those foundational literacy skills that it is so apparent to us that those good readers are incredibly facile with any sort of connected text you put in front of them. Conversely, struggling readers, not quite the same. They have much, much more difficulty really chewing through text and decoding. And it means that if we present them a similar passage the next time, they'll have similar sorts of challenges. So we want to be providing alternate forms, that is similar text repeatedly. That is if we're going to be monitoring progress every week or every 2 weeks. But they need to be slightly different. Otherwise, students can just memorize what it is that they're reading. And as, again, is the common example I gave, this is really just something that we would be looking at to look at weekly reading passages with connected text. You can also do that with word reading lists, or different comprehension measures are also very common for monitoring progress. Now, as I mentioned, we can be looking at rates of improvement over time, but we can also do some other clever tricks with monitoring progress where we look at the efficacy of different forms of instruction, in addition to being really critical in thinking how we are identifying the students who are not making the progress that we want them to make. Now, that is a value judgment as adults. We are expecting them to make a certain amount of progress, right? And if they are not making that progress as students, we worry about them. We worry that they are not only at risk for reading failure, but they might end up not with those foundational literacy skills. So progress monitoring helps us determine when we need to make an instructional change. So that is not the outcome. We have a much more positive outcome. Progress monitoring graphs should really look like this. We see on the x-axis or the horizontal time. This is, for example, number of weeks. In week one, this student was reading approximately 20 words correctly in a connected text passage. By week five, if we track up here, they're reading about 60 words read correctly. That is triple in 5 weeks. That is fantastic growth. We would characterize that as if you were to draw a slope line, we would see that they're increasing about 6 words read correctly per week. Absolutely fantastic growth. We can also see much more of a flat line on the figure on the right. The student is really hovering sort of between 10 and 30 words read correctly, and their rate of growth is only about 0.3 increased words read correctly per week. So the figure on the right indicates we should really make an instructional change. The figure on the left indicates this student really seems to be making the growth that we want them to be making. So essentially, it comes down to there are increasing scores and flat scores. Of course, there can also be decreasing scores. That is perhaps an even worse situation than flat scores. We do not like to see regression. We like to see progression in student literacy skill acquisition. But flat scores really speak to a need for change. Now, we can also look at, instead of just an individual student, much more broadly, we can look at three different intervention types. Intervention A, indicated by the blue line, shows some pretty solid linear growth over time, whereas intervention C seemed to sort of flatline for a while, and then it did pick up. So at this point, we really want to be thinking, why is it that some of our interventions are working better than others? Why is it if we have reading groups, for example, some reading groups are making really solid progress and other reading groups aren't quite getting there? What are some of those variables we can look at? As a literacy leader, it's on you and really on us as literacy leaders to be asking the right questions. One is about strength. You know, the program that you're implementing with students, whether it's an intervention, if you want to characterize it as an intervention or a reading group or whatever it is you're doing during that really core focused literacy building time, is there evidence to suggest that the curriculum that you're using is really effective? What about dosage? The group size? Would it be better if there were less students in the group, or if you increase students in groups that are working, would that affect some positive change? There's also, of course, duration. People love to point at duration as a really key alterable variable. If students are in reading groups 20 minutes for 3 times a week, what if we change it to 30 minutes 4 times a week? Would increasing that dosage really make an impact? There's also alignment. Is the actual core literacy learning that students are doing in their reading groups or intervention groups, does that align with what's happening in the classroom? If there's a misalignment, then students are really getting two different tracks of instruction. And if it doesn't fit nicely together, it's going to be hard for them to apply those skills, which is commensurate with attention to transfer. Can they generalize and transfer those skills they're learning into the real world? Because literacy, as we all know, does not exist in a vacuum. It does not exist just in reading group or just in school. Literacy is everywhere. There's also, of course, some of those broader factors. We can think comprehensively. Does the intervention or reading groups that we are running, do they include comprehensive, really explicit instructional techniques such that every single interaction that students are doing, they have opportunities to respond? Are they reviewing where they need to review? Is the program really built not just on 5 minutes of daily practice, but a little longer, more like 20, 30, maybe 45 minutes, depending on how these groups look, of really comprehensive different aspects of literacy and zeroing in on the rates of growth you want to see for specific components? For example, oral reading fluency. Comprehensiveness can also look at how well that curriculum that you're using integrates into the more broad, comprehensive, what's happening in core classrooms. Are students getting opportunities to respond not only in their reading group, but also in their classroom? Can they review both in their reading group and review in their classroom? And then, of course, there's individualization. This is where we need to be digging deep for our students who are continually not responding. We really want to be doing everything we can to support them. And after trying several of these different variables, if we're not getting there, we're going to need to individualize a little further, think about goal setting. And we'll talk a little more about that just after this next section. So what I'd like to do now is offer a poll. And also, this seems like a pretty good natural breaking point to ask Lauren if there's any questions in the chat or anything that would be good to address at this point.
Yeah, so we have a couple of questions. One is, in the initial example that was shown, it took 18 weeks to find an effective intervention. So is this something that's typically found? What's like a typical type of time frame we should expect?
I missed the first part of that about the 18 weeks. Could you repeat just that part?
Yeah, in the example, it showed 18 weeks in the graph to find the effective intervention. So if you can kind of talk a little bit more about that image.
Absolutely. Wonderful question. And then that sort of speaks to the core question of what a data review team might ask. How is it that we can determine when intervention should be working, quote unquote, should? This sort of fits nicely with the idea that there is a very clear sort of value judgment we put on students to be expecting them to learn a certain amount by a certain time and develop some of those foundational skills. 18 weeks is somewhat arbitrary. That is, I'm not saying that the standard all across the board needs to be 18 weeks and students need to respond within 18 weeks. In fact, there is certainly an argument for shorter. In the initial graph that I showed, that was sort of the, I suppose, like case argument for why we should do progress monitoring and all. We noticed that after maybe even 6 weeks, if students are not responding to that intervention, or instead of that flatline, we're actually seeing a decrease overall, they're not gaining any foundational skills in the way that we are measuring it, then we can look at adjusting progress after 6 is certainly reasonable, but it really needs to fit with what the capacity is in your building. We cannot be adjusting reading groups, for example, every 2 weeks. That would be way too frequent, and that would not allow enough time for routine setting. So what we really need to be doing is thinking about what is feasible in our context to increase intervention intensity for those students who need it. 18 weeks might be too long. It might also be too short. Sometimes we know that schools really have one point in the school year where they can make really strong instructional adjustments. That's what they've been doing. That's their routine. And if that's the case, maybe 18 weeks, maybe 20 weeks, a little longer. Of course, as a school psychologist, in my heart of hearts, I think if we can track that down to a shorter time frame where we see some of our non-responders after maybe 8 weeks, that is 2 months of instruction and reading group, are not making the progress, then we can look at some of those instructional variables to change. So I hope that answers your question. I'll also point you to NCII's resource that is in the PDF packet sent out to all of you. And it is a really, really nice way to think about this exact question and how to individualize it to your school and your local context.
Okay, I'll go ahead and launch the poll.
Sounds good.
Awesome.
And so this question asks, and the prior slide, David just talked through the active ingredients related to literacy intervention. So dosage, alignment, supplemental supports, intensification, a few others. And we just wanted everyone to take a minute and check which active ingredient you might prioritize in the coming time period. Yeah, so it sounds like the majority of everyone on this event is looking at prioritizing alignment to student needs. So that definitely got the most at 76%. And then kind of the next one, which we'll talk about next, is intensification. So looking at effective components of intensification. Supplemental supports came in third at 8%, and then dosage at 4%. But definitely it looks like many people want to look at alignment to student need.
Yeah, that is, it's so common and something that I think, knowing that as empathetic humans who work in the education sector, so common. We can so easily think of students who are either non-responders or we know that they are at risk and we want to do everything we can to help them. So how do we align our progress monitoring data, link that with instructional need, and help them achieve some of those really core literacy skills such that they can have literacy and be fluent with that for the rest of their lives? So this section is really on the how of progress monitoring, and part of that will be looking at alignment. So please do ask further questions and more specific questions if you have them as we go. Now, you know, a key piece of this is certainly choosing the right tool. And choosing the right tool, fortunately, we have a ton of data and research on. NCII's academic progress monitoring tools chart is the like one-stop shop for what you need to know in selecting a progress monitoring tool. Again, we want them to be reliable, valid, and evidence-based because of those, as well as efficient. This is a screenshot from NCIA's website in their progress monitoring tools chart, and you'll notice they actually have data on reliability and validity here. They use, in the legend, you can see they have some different indicators giving convincing evidence, partially convincing evidence, and unconvincing evidence of all the different measures that they list. It's very likely if you're already using a screener or progress monitoring tool in literacy, you will find your measure here on the academic progress monitoring tools chart. You can look at the reliability, validity, and think through how that currently fits within your literacy model in your school and whether or not a different tool would be better or different sort of biases that come with these tools. You can see here the bias analysis, very important to be cognizant of. I see Lauren just put the link in the chat, so I really encourage you to check that out if you have not already. So how do we do this? How do we really progress monitor in a way that makes sense? I'll get into what is currently happening in your school buildings and address that shortly. But, you know, really, I want to sort of point to what is hopefully the elephant in the room, in that it is time intensive and hard. At the same time, I really want to encourage you to use a common sense approach. This should not be something that is so burdensome that just collecting the data burns everybody out, because then we can't even have the capacity to use the data. Progress monitoring should really be something that's consistent. And if that needs to be monthly, that's okay. If it can be twice a month, that's fantastic. It needs to be systematic as well. Fitting within the framework that you have in your school building for deploying literacy instruction, assessment, as well as savvy literacy leaders even link to professional learning. And we think about how to incorporate some of those core features of instruction and assessment in professional learning and really shape up what it looks like to be tracking and improving student progress. And as well, we're going to let the data drive us. We are not going to go on our own intuition or our own feelings. We're going to cluster multiple data points. It's not only about one measure, it's about multiple measures. And we can have them formal and informal, and together they really drive the process for monitoring student progress. I really encourage you, and I've said this several times, to know your limit and play within it. Really think about what the capacity is in your building to monitor student progress and how feasible it is to plan intervention around the data that you're collecting. As I mentioned, clustering data points, very important. If you have been involved in a reading group team where we're deciding which students are in which groups based on data, you know all too well, it's very easy to get stuck in the weeds of, well, student A cannot be with student B, and I know students C and D do not do well together, so we need to really be careful with how we construct these groups, because there's more than just reading scores on the table, aren't there? There's also behavioral, social, emotional, informal, and even educator level indicators of success of these groups that we want to be thinking about. It's not just one score. It really is thinking about all of that data together. Now, as a school psychologist, in my world, I really dig deep on this stuff. I take progress monitoring measures, and I think about a data-based individualization process. If students are still not responding after we've been using intervention for a while, and even maybe altering our intervention, then we might want to think about some more diagnostic data that leads to intervention adaptations. And then again, we continue progress monitoring. Now, this is sort of a deep dive. As a literacy leader and perhaps school building principal, I know many of you in the chat have said that you are a school building principal. You won't necessarily be doing the one conducting the diagnostic data. That is for other folks on your team. Though there are some look-fors which are really, really important and you will want to be keeping in mind. That is the lion's share of the remainder of this section. But just know that this data-based individualization process maps onto the look-fors as a literacy leader. Data-based individualization is truly a validated framework. It's a process. It doesn't just happen once. It's something that with students who demonstrate need, we are doing multiple times. And it's domain specific to what the data is showing us. If it's showing that fluency is a really, really sticky issue for this student, it's going to very likely be several years of going through this. Now, going through this as a school psychologist will look different as a literacy leader. And as a literacy leader, your look-fors have essentially five key components. And I'll walk through each of these. So first, we want to be planning. We want to be thinking about what the current context is for us, what we're really doing right now, not what we say we're doing, what we're actually doing right now, document that, and then look at changes you can make towards continuous improvement. So I'll start with planning and then get and walk through each of these. In planning, we really want to be systematizing your current approach. I already mentioned documenting, but put on a calendar not only when intervention groups happen, when instructional change is supposed to happen, but also when assessments happen. Not only assessment data collection, but data use. It is probably not surprising to you that a common theme I've noticed in working with schools is that sometimes we collect high stakes tests, we collect that data, sometimes in the spring, and we don't get the results back until the following fall. Well, how can any instructional adaptation be made? In the fall, you typically have a new teacher and a new class, and there's a whole lot of movement. So that is a big gap in the system. If we're doing progress monitoring, we want to be collecting data and then using it within a set number of weeks, probably. Days would be amazing, but I realize depending on how large your schools are, that might be too tall an order. So when you're planning, you're going to want to ask some key questions. One of my favorites is the third bullet point. Are students receiving intervention that complements core instruction? I hinted at this idea already. Is it that in their reading group, they can actually transfer those skills into what they're learning back in the core classroom? Or if their reading group is already in the classroom in an inclusive environment, that's great. But is that on the same level? Is it commensurate with, can they use their skills in concert with any school-based environment they're in? And then even better, can they use it at home? If they're doing any sort of literacy activities at home. We love teachers who really encourage this and work with parents and parent-school partnerships to really encourage literacy that can be everywhere. We want this as much as possible, such that it complements not only core instruction, but also all literacy type activities in the world. Another key look for as a literacy leader is that intervention needs to happen. it sort of seems like a very simple idea, but hopefully this can really drive home an idea that if you don't think about it this way, I hope you do after I explain. You know, the quickest way to close the gap between actual and desired student performance is applying principles of effective instruction. You cannot assess your way out of a problem. Assessing simply speaks to the magnitude of the problem. Now, the figure on the left describes the Matthew effect in reading. There's a ton of literature on this, and I won't go too far into it, but essentially in red, we see that students with foundational skills grow sometimes exponentially in their reading performance. But students without those foundational skills essentially flatline. And students grow on top of their existing literacy skills. Those that are already solid learners continue to be even more productive learners in literacy over time. It builds on itself. And if you don't have that early, we have an issue from the outset. Now, in order to address that gap, essentially we have to do effective instruction. There's no way that an assessment can address that. That is, intervene first. Please, please, please work with students and do everything you can to help them build those foundational skills and use assessment to supplement that. The core idea with this that I shared in the screening lecture with NAASP was every minute in assessment is a minute away from instruction. We need to be so careful with our instructional minutes because that is what really, really matters for students. High quality, intensive intervention for students who are non-responders. So in that, what we really want to be doing is we want to be paying attention to how many instructional minutes are lost to various things that happen daily in schools. And assessments, especially for progress monitoring, should not take a long time. A look for as a literacy leader example, if you are walking the halls of your school building and you see paraprofessionals, educators, allied professionals saying, oh, today's not a teaching day, we're just doing assessments today. I am philosophically opposed to that. We do not have assessment days where no teaching happens. Every day is a teaching day. We always are teaching students how to read in the best way that we can. And we use assessments to inform instructional change. And those assessments only need to be very, very short in duration. I'm talking 1 to 3 minutes to get an indication of how the students are performing and what we can do to then ameliorate some of those gaps. So I would also like to point you to NCII's Instructional Intensification Strategy Checklist. I've put a screenshot on the left, and then on the right, you'll see some different indicators where we can be asking key questions, and it's sort of a nice checklist as a literacy leader. You can look at what could potentially be happening if it's not already. For example, you can look at addressing group size, number of sessions per week. You can look at different environments for intervention. Another section is alignment. So how well does this align if you're working on really discrete skills with a broader, more target skill? In addition to aligning with perhaps other areas, reading and writing so often go together. And finally, as an example, attention to transfer. So important that we're really thinking about those explicit instruction techniques. We're pre-teaching where we can. Are we explicitly teaching connections between what students are learning and what they already know in their background knowledge? So just a few examples. I love that checklist as an example, and I would highly recommend that you check it out to really look at some of those alterable variables. There are other components such as strength, comprehensiveness. Hopefully these are sounding familiar because these are all of the alterable variables that I've already gone through. So after planning and after intervening, not necessarily in a linear chronological order, but we also want to be thinking about this is all sort of at the same time in an order that makes sense for your school building. We want to be collecting that progress monitoring data. This is different than screening. Screening, we want to be looking at all students in your school building. And we're not really setting goals necessarily with screening. You can, but screening is really just an indication of the health of your literacy, of students' literacy in your school building. Whereas progress monitoring, more likely to only tap about 1 in 5 students in the school building, maybe less than that, depending on your capacity. And we explicitly want to be doing goal setting. That's the key difference between progress monitoring and screening, from my opinion. So when you're doing data collection as progress monitoring, you're going to want to be ensuring that there are trained assessors. So if you're using standardized assessment, people know how to use them properly and collect data in a standardized fashion. As well, we want to be predictable with the way that we're running data review meetings and really want to be encouraging active involvement from all team members, those who are both collecting the data and using the data, as well as the educators, if they're not the ones collecting and using the data. So there are some important logistics you're going to want to think about. These are just some examples. What's the turnaround time from data collection to data review? What are some of the gaps that I've noticed as a literacy leader in the way that we collect data? And how might that interact with bias or errors in the way that we make decisions around instructional change? You know, one really powerful idea is this. Progress monitoring, if you represent it visually in a graph like this, you can really see, you can literally see the change happening in front of your eyes. Now, the change can be flatlining. The change can be linear increase. It can also be linear decrease. Exponential increase would be fantastic. But essentially, we want to be setting a goal that is, by the end of 18 weeks, by the end of 36 weeks, or by the end of 10 weeks, we want to see a certain amount of progress. And as students are getting there, we want to be tapping their progress and seeing how that is going. It is very apparent, for example, in this graph, that for a while, students seemed to be on track with this goal, and then they leveled off. That speaks to the need for instructional change. I also want to share this idea. You know, as literacy leaders, we are tasked with being relentless champions for student success. Students deserve ambitious goal setting. It can really feel as though sometimes we want to set goals that are achievable, that we know we can reach as educators. And we think, okay, this student has made this kind of progress before. We think they can make it again. Let's set that goal. But really think about the fact that if students are making very linear growth over time, then they're not really building or gaining on that momentum. They're really sort of just running parallel to the gap that already exists. They actually need to grow more than the students who are already on track with core instruction. That is, we really need to be in the business of building and maintaining momentum in every single way that we can. So push for really ambitious goals as a literacy leader wherever you can. On those decision points and alterable variables, you know, we can set rules. And I would argue that we should set rules. And those should be really more guidelines than rules. But we want to be looking at level, trend, variability of that graph, whether or not we are on track with the trend line toward our goal. And if we are not on track, after maybe 4 weeks of not being on track, after maybe 8 weeks of not being on track, we decide, you know what? It's time to increase dosage. It's time to change one component of what we're doing to see if that intensification meets student need. A few points on the when and the how there, but you know, I really want to get across it as a literacy leader. There are tons of look fors. And hopefully you've already realized there's all kinds of things you can be looking at to really tap what's going on in your building and how the health of your literacy system can be changed and continuously improved in different ways. An example of that as well is fidelity checks. This is not a rating of other, this is not evaluative. This is rather just a checklist of, are these things happening? This is also from NCII. Clearly, I'm a big fan of all of their resources. They have brought together a ton of really high-performing, powerful researchers, scholars, and practitioners to put together really usable and hopefully really practical as well resources for you in your school building. So the last look for is really around adjusting that need and thinking about what it means to adjust both for individual students and for individual educators, because we are so quick to want to really think about adjusting if something's not working, but sometimes we need to give some time to ensure it is working. So with that, we can actually look at a nice chart like this. Again, this is a resource that's given to you, tons and tons of resources today. Some of the dimensions that I've already discussed, and then a self-rating can be incredibly impactful in thinking through what it would mean to really effectively drive some of these adaptations that we make such that your self-rating points to, you know what? We haven't looked all that closely at attention to transfer. That's our lowest self-rating. What's a different adaptation we can make? What's one of these look fors in all the different, you know, fidelity checklist and instruction intensification checklist? What are some of the things that we might want to be tuning up? So this is a really deep dive on alterable variables. This is really thinking comprehensively about everything that we might be able to change. This is absolutely not an exhaustive list. There is so much that we could look at, but just know as a literacy leader, give yourself pause and think about a gradual on-ramp. We really, really want to be taking one step at a time towards continuous improvement. So again, I think this is a good place to sort of pause. I've given you a lot there. Ask Lauren if there are any questions, and as well, we'll have a poll for you very shortly.
Yeah, thank you. I think that we had a question related to sharing data with parents, and that parents really like to see the graph data. And it reminded me that there is a tip from the field that's on NCII's webpage. And actually, I'll read it. It says, sharing GRASH progress monitoring data provides educators with opportunities for engaging families and students in the database individualization process by illustrating trends. So I think that really aligns nicely with some of the comments in the chat. I did get a comment about, I'm just trying to find it. It was about how to graph the progress monitoring data, I believe. Are there any really good tracking tools to track progress monitoring?
Yes. Okay. So my top recommendation is at the front of this section. I gave that progress monitoring tools chart. Those tools are absolutely the ones you're going to want to be looking at, and look at the one that makes the most sense for your context based on the evidence. And there's a few different indicators there. So I'll point you to that, as well as NCII actually has a really nice progress monitoring workshop. It'll only take you about 2 hours. There's a few different modules. And as you go through, you can think about how to effectively use that tool that you select for your students in your local context.
There are a couple of things that came in on virtual, and I think that's what we're getting to next. But first, we'll do a really quick poll. I know it's coming up on the hour. So where's progress monitoring? Where's the workflow that you're finding in your school and team is getting stuck? So is that on the planning, intervention, data collection, making instructional decisions, or adjustments? And we'll give it another second and then close it. Yeah, and the majority, 39% of everyone is saying that making instructional adjustments is sort of where there's some of the areas where the team is getting stuck. So again, a lot of the resources and links that we shared can help with that. Making instructional decisions, collecting data kind of came up in the next group at about 17-19%, and then planning an intervention next.
Fantastic. Great. Yeah. Again, those alterations are absolutely something that we're all here for. So it's wonderful to see that the core message of what I'm here to share is a really good fit with what it is you're looking to do in your building. This last section I'm actually going to do extremely quickly. It fits just with my previous session in November on screening. As a reminder, we can do this virtually if we need to in the current context. I realize there's a pandemic. We absolutely need to acknowledge that. There are some really, really good tips and best practices available. Those are provided on your resource sheet as well. In short, we want to be using brief standardized tools, and we want to be comparing apples to apples. Switching the mode of administration on a child in a matter of weeks might not be fair unless we switch it and then continue on with a new mode for the remainder. So some different considerations for you, which boil down to this. You want to be asking, if we're going to collect data remotely, is it going to be valid? Can we actually use it for instructional decision making? And can we use it beyond that to communicate to parents and communicate within our team, school building level teams? If not, informal measures might be more appropriate. That is, instead of a formal standardized measure, you're more offering students the opportunity to read with rich literature, and you're simply listening to them read and tracking some of that informally. So a few resources as well for students with disabilities. This is specific to looking at what we can do to address IEPs and looking at some of the policy and practice in the current context. These are some of the three, like, hot off the press, really, really high quality resources you're going to want to be thinking about. And I highly encourage that you check out these. And now, because I've given you over a dozen different things to check out, I'm going to very quickly just address the fact that as literacy leaders, we want to be doing everything we can to really, really be upholding continuous improvement and starting somewhere. We do not want perfect to be the enemy of good. We really, really want to be that savvy and relentless champion for student success at all levels. There is even research to suggest that some of those attributes as a leader, you want to be empowering of your staff, you want to involve people and really collaborate highly. So I've included some additional resources here, which I think puts me way over a dozen resources to share with you. It's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much. I'm going to hand it back to Lauren.
Great. Thank you. We have just a little bit of time left. Again, some great comments in the chat and questions, and definitely our emails are in the PowerPoint. So please feel free to connect with us if you have any questions. I will put the survey link in the chat. If you're able to do the survey, that really helps us with our information about how these sessions are meeting your needs and points of improvement. So I will put the link in the chat. And wanted to thank David for all of the great information and everyone's engagement and questions in the chat. It was really a pleasure. And just to wrap up, just briefly wanted to highlight, again, the Lead for Literacy framework at the front of the session and in the resource list. If you go to the next slide, next two slides, and the next one. Yeah, so again, this is a framework that was designed for school leaders to support your implementation around school-wide reading models, and there's tools and resources at the L4L website. And again, we definitely encourage the use of a continuous improvement process with any of the action items and engagement with the framework that goes along with it. Again, our next session on the next slide will be at the end of March, and we will be focused on an instruction component within the framework and talk specifically about supporting children in their word recognition and code-based skills. And with that, I will turn it back over to, and our contacts are there as well, to Gracie and Honor. Thank you so much, everybody.
Thank you, David and Lauren and Lana. We really appreciate it. David, you made some really, really powerful points today. I appreciated you talking to principals about looking at the capacity within their own buildings and setting those parameters. And I love it when we talk about empowering others to be a part of the process, because being a principal is a hard job, or an assistant principal, and we can't do it alone. So that's an important skill for principals to have, is to be able to reach out, empower others, and work together to build that team of leaders and learners within their own buildings. So thank you so much. Again, the Lead for Literacy website is just full of great resources for school leaders. So we want to point you again in that direction. And we'll look forward to our next webinar coming up. And it seems like they get here before we know it. So thank you again for all of the information you shared today.